Welcome to the Working Parent Podcast. This podcast season is designed to resource working parents throughout lockdown and beyond. I'm Sharon Charlton-Thompson, one of the co-founders of the Working Parent Company. You can find out more about us at theworkingparentcompany.co.uk or follow us on LinkedIn, where we're posting daily updates. Today's episode is about the huge area of children and technology. And how can kids stay connected during lockdown, but stay connected safely? Now, this is a bit of a strange one, because my guest today is Paul Thompson. Paul Thompson is one of our speakers at the Working Parent Company and is the director of techforparents.co.uk. Paul is also my husband, so this is one of the weirdest podcasts that I have recorded. But in service of letting our listeners know about what can be done to really help kids stay safe online. It is a delight to welcome my husband to this podcast and to chat about this today. So I'm going to start by obviously saying hello. Hello, husband.
Hello, Sharon.
Can you tell the listeners a bit about Tech for Parents and what you do?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I've been in the industry for about 25 years now in technology, and Tech for Parents was born about 3 or 4 years ago as a side project for me and has grown exponentially in the last sort of 5 years as our children have got older. And it focuses all of my attention about taking the skills I've learned at work and applying those to online safety for children. I think all the parents will know about the dangers of being online and what's happened online. It's all over the press and has been and will unfortunately continue to be. So Tech for Parents is one of those companies that's out there trying to help parents and resource parents keep their children safe online and give them that level of security and safety.
Great. Okay. So let's get into it and try not to bicker as husband and wife and talk about safety and technology for children online. So I'll talk about the reality of being a working parent right now and what I'm hearing from clients, etc., and my own experience. So much of our day-to-day lives has moved online, and the same is true for our children. So they're being schooled online, their socialising is online, all the quizzes with family and friends are online, gaming is online, social media is online. It's the way they see the world, and it was probably the way they saw the world before lockdown, but increasingly so during lockdown. You mentioned all the reports in the press, you know, the sort of headlines about all the nasties that can go on and sadly do go on and cause lots of suffering for children online. There are so many conflicting reports about screen time. What is your view, your professional view on screen time when it comes to children?
Everything you just said there, I can almost put into two words for the children. They are digitally native. These children were born after the internet, so their only knowledge of the world is with being online. So it's very different if we were to judge them by our standards and try and restrict their screen time based on that. So we have to put ourselves slightly out of our own comfort zone and think more about what it would be like if we were born where only the internet existed and if we were then having our parents take that away from us. So you're quite right in the fact that children will find their education online, their entertainment online, their music, video online, but also their social media online, their lives online. And us as parents, our job, I think, is to try and ensure that the quantity of screen time is managed, so there is a limit, but it's more important that we focus our attention on the quality of screen time. So if what they're consuming is of high quality, really engaging content, really fun times with their friends, if all that is of good quality, the volume becomes much more of an issue that we don't have to worry about. It doesn't matter how much time they spend online. The latest reports are changing the opinions of the last 10 years, now looking at screen time and the effects of social media on things like anxiety and depression. It's not the volume now. It is the quality that they're finding much more indicative of the behaviour within our children. So absolutely, as parents, you need to get involved. You need to measure that quality, that quantity, but you need to ensure the quality, and that was what will help them in the long run.
Can you tell listeners a little bit about the good parts of tech? Because it gets such a bashing, particularly social media. So the good parts of tech, what is that quality?
This pandemic has done one thing, the tragedy has been absolutely awful. But we have embraced, those of us who have been in lockdown, have embraced technology in a whole new way. And I think we are as a human race forging a newer relationship with technology. So quite right, you know, we've got nannies online on Zoom meetings and grandpas chatting to their grandkids. We've got much more connectivity with families wanting to get together, spend some time online, because that's all we can have. And we've got schools, mostly private, but some state as well, are embracing online classrooms and online learning in a new way. So the quality has gone up in the sense of the connectivity, the remote working, the benefits for children to maintain their educational needs as best as we can. And we are forging new relationships with technology in the world, I think. So for now, I hope that continues as much as possible. We just need to, in the industry, make sure that we're still, and as parents, we're still conscious of safeguarding measures and providing safeguarding frameworks for our children so that we don't slip back into that world we were in before.
I'm thinking now, as we're talking, about the addictive nature of the phone, of the screen, and how hard, even as an adult, how hard it is to step away from Instagram or Facebook or, you know, whatever it is that's available to us, BBC News feeds. It's so hard to step away at times from devices, especially under lockdown, where for many people, perhaps they've, you know, that need to sort of completely switch off and escape. And so that can be a good way to do it. That means it's also really, really hard for our kids to step away. You know, I know the okay, time to come off Xbox now, and the sort of wails I get if they're in the middle of a game or something. How do we manage that quantity and you know, minimize that addictive nature or mitigate that addictive nature of social media?
There are some really, really good tools out there. The way they're introduced in a family environment when they've not been there at all is difficult after the, you know, barn door is open, the horse is bolted, but it's achievable. But certainly in earlier life, getting children earlier in life, these are absolutely critical to going forward. So I'd encourage all parents to use their search engine and look for parental software. The application that I've used called Our Pact, there's NetNanny and there's Q Studio, the very flavors of them, they're out there. Some are free and some are costed. So have a look at what's out there for parental software. But these are sharp tools that can be installed on a phone, and they will track and monitor the phone, both geographically for safety reasons, but also what our children are doing on their phones. It will record, I think with the iPhone screen time software, it will record whether they're gaming, social media, productivity. You just literally have to turn it on the phone and leave it, and it will measure what you do every day. And as parents then, when you see that information coming in, you'll start to look at it and think, oh, okay, so it will tell you the app they pick up first after they pick up the phone, how many times they pick up the phone every day, how long they spend on social media or gaming or productivity tools, and all that's measured for you. So it's just a way of using these tools that are there now. They can be easily installed. They're pretty cheap to run, and it will give you a world of information for parents about what your children are doing online. And I don't say this to be too difficult for parents to do. These are really simple tools to start with, and you can grow your use of them as you grow your knowledge and familiarity, but you can always start small. So I would just encourage parents to, even on their own phones, turn on screen time and just see what it's telling you. It's a great way to start.
So that kind of monitoring software, so for our listeners, they would just Google parental software, would they? And these things would come up, like Our Pact, etc. And they're some of them are free, I think, and some of them that you have to pay a subscription. And they give you a sort of sophisticated level of, you know, who's picking up the phone and doing what and how long, et cetera. And then there's also a free thing on an iPhone anyway, isn't there, that gives a sort of minimal version of that.
Absolutely. For some time now, Apple have had the screen time application built into the iOS. So that works on iPads and iPhones and iPods. And to turn it on, it's very simple. You just go to settings, scroll down to screen time, and you'll see something saying turn on screen time. If you've never done this before you do that step, I would certainly recommend setting up family sharing and using family sharing within the Apple ecosystem. That way, as a parent, you have a trust relationship with your child's devices, and so those devices will feed the parent device with the reports coming out of them each day and each week, and they will be able to be read on the parent's device. So you've got the added benefit then of not having to take your device off your child or be looking at it at night time. You can study these reports on your own device. And there are various levels of sophistication in these reports. At the highest level, you'll be able to see what categories of application they've been using, productivity applications, games, or social networking. But if you want to go down a level below that, you'll then be able to actually delve into the time they've used within their gaming apps and see which specific games they've been playing or which specific apps they've been using in social media and for how long. There's a world of information in there, but I would certainly say it's at the highest level. You can start small and you can build up your knowledge and familiarity with the tools and then understand the reports in more detail. And there would be various settings within that area of the phone. So there's screen time, there's content and privacy restrictions, there is downtime, there are allowed apps. These are applications which you allow even when they've run out of their allotted screen time. So for example, texting, maybe maps, these are things you really want to have all the time. And those applications you can set in the to be on all the time. And they would be all reflected of the current regulations with the restrictions on content, so be that film, TV, or social media, and also with gaming. So you can restrict gaming to certain levels of ages as well to make sure that the appropriate content is being received by the appropriate age child. And finally, on that note, I would just add that the Google family sharing is a very similar setup to Apple's family sharing, and the Android phone system has very similar applications. Some will be installed by default, some may have to be downloaded and installed from the Google Play Store, but certainly those families that are running Android phones, they have access to these reports as well. I don't believe you're going to have many applications outside of the paid for ones that will work on any platform or mixed platforms.
What about, you mentioned there about different ages of kids. So obviously for listeners that have younger children, they're in a brilliant position really for these digital natives. You know, kids are getting younger and younger, now swiping everything because they're so used to smartphones, et cetera. For parents listening with younger kids, what are the fundamentals about what to set up when your children have got their first phone or the PlayStation or the Xbox or whatever? And then we'll think about, for older kids, you know, when some of the habits have already come in, then how can you dial back or something like that? So younger kids first.
Sure. For the younger children, I'd certainly say it's likely that they're going to be using the parent's device or maybe an iPad that they've been given, an older iPad maybe has been passed down to them. So when that is set up, parents need to ensure that they set that up with the privacy and content and security settings in place for the age of the child so that they can't accidentally stumble across websites and tap on links that they shouldn't be tapping on. So the device itself will block those. Equally, if you're on the Wi-Fi at home, you can set up content restrictions on your router. So you might want to do even both of those to get a belt and braces affair. But the content restrictions and the screen time limits are the main two areas to focus on as a parent for the younger children. And then as our children get older towards the end of primary school, it's likely that they're going to be given their own mobile device, telephone at that time. And then it's time to introduce the lessons of treating people how you want to be treated online. So it's about the common decency and courtesy with which they treat other people and the ability to report when they've been mistreated online to their parents or through school, if there's a trusted area through school, which there should be, to make sure that that behaviour is stamped out at its source as quickly as possible. During this time, they will also start to get to the age of 13, where they will be introduced into the social media networking world. And this is where you open up the can of worms, as it were. So in order to do that in a safe and secure manner, it's very much a situation where parents should have the ability to follow their children and make sure they can check their children's timelines and educate them along the way as far as content that's appropriate to send and share and what is not appropriate, and teaching them about information that is private. And there are two main aspects to that. Firstly, it's about the content that you're sharing, and then it's about the people who you're sharing it with. So for the content, their birthday, address, family pet's name,
where their family is going on holiday, when their family is going on holiday. All that information is extremely private and confidential and should be kept as such. And then who they're sharing it with. Parents have an innate responsibility, I believe, to ensure that as they introduce these tools to their children, that they are aware of who their children are following and who is following their children. A classic example would be where their child says, I want to follow a pop star or a footballer or an athlete or whatever it might be, or a TV celebrity, and they find an account and they follow it, but it hasn't got the mark of the official account, or it isn't the official account. It's a name very similar to the official account. And these have been created in their millions, unfortunately, by people with software that can do this in quite a sophisticated manner. And their ability to then harvest information through using questions and questionnaires and tickets for the concert, if you can share with me your best time on holiday and when you go back and whatever it might be, these are techniques and tools that the criminal world will use to get information and then use that information for their own purposes. Now, as the children get older, you're talking obviously now to young adults. Parents, I would imagine, will know their children best, but it's going to be a much more difficult conversation. My suggestion would be to show the maximum amount of vulnerability you can in saying that you haven't done this in the past and you had ignored it because you didn't understand it or because it was moving too fast for you, but that you now need to get control of it because you've got some more information. Maybe you've heard this podcast or you've seen my website and now you've got information that says these are the things you can and should do for keeping your children safe online and for keeping you safe online as well. So you're definitely part of the conversation. That puts you in the same boat as they're in, about measuring screen time, about keeping people safe online, and just ensure that you use the technology, then the internet, as tools that can enhance your life and inform your learning, and not something that can consume your life and overwhelm you.
Okay, you mentioned there in answering that question about cast iron rules. What are, I imagine they're different for different ages, but if you're going to set down, you know, these are the guidelines really to be really aware of, what are those cast iron rules that you talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. For children to stay safe online, these are the golden rules. So must have their devices that they've got, whether it's a tablet or a phone or gaming machine, must always have parental control software either installed or set up or configured. So no device that a child uses should be out of the box because they don't come configured with all the safety things ticked and correctly configured. So that's absolutely cast iron. Security and privacy must be protected at all times. That provides a safety blanket. The next one is about what they do online. So if they're being social and they're gaming, absolutely only play with people they actually know physically. So school friends, friends around the streets, friends that they know, their family, their cousins, all fine. But parents should absolutely be very critically involved in monitoring anyone they're going to play with who is, you know, another person in the world, because you have no idea who that human being might be. So to provide that security and comfort for you and for them as children, I'd say absolutely only in the physical world. And then the third one really in that one is back to the screen time, quality, quantity. It's okay to have the quantity there if the quality is good enough. So then it's just about knowing what they're doing online, and that shouldn't be a trade secret. So it's the three pillars are privacy and security must be there, physicality must be there, must be a reflection of your physical world, and the screen time monitoring, quality, quantity must be there. If those three things are there, you want a really good place to start with.
So I know one of the things you talk about, you said that our kids are digital natives, but also you talk a lot about digital resilience when you do the webinars for us at the Working Parent Company. Can you say more about what that is, digital resilience, and who needs it? The kids, us, all of us?
I think we absolutely all need it, as parents and children need it. For parents, certainly we've been in places where we've probably had arguments online or disagreements online, and it has affected our mental health, our anxiety levels, or our levels of depression. And that is a palpable physical experience from an online encounter. So digital resilience for adults is absolutely essential to have a critical mindset when looking at information online, understanding that everything you read online is not necessarily factual, and every other website out there isn't Wikipedia. So it's an opinion, it's conjecture, some of it's downright lies. We know that, but we have to be able to identify and fact check and cross fact check, if you like, so that we can then prove when things are right, we can actually take some encouragement to believe in them. So for our children, it's critical that they have access to engaging, age-appropriate information about mental health on websites and apps that they use. I know the BBC brought one out very, very recently about trying to ensure that the language that they're using when they're communicating with each other is of an appropriate nature and doesn't contain material that could end up upsetting somebody or doing harm to somebody. All the schools have taken action with this now. There are digital resilience embedded into their Ofsted e-safety curriculum. Teachers and social workers and professionals in the mental health area are also very well aware of the effects of digital resilience now on children, or the lack of digital resilience, I should say. So everyone is now galvanised behind a common theme, which is to educate and equip our young children with sufficient digital resilience to withstand the rigours of being online in the sort of adult world, because they're on there with all of us, and to enable them to have confidence to turn to a trusted other, be that an older sibling or the parent or a schoolmaster, to get help when they need it and to put their hand up and say, I'm struggling with this and I need help. So it's about quite a lot of life skills in there, quite a lot of skills that go way beyond technology. It's about equipping them to have a life where they can live online, but be cognizant that that is not the be all and end all. And although it's slightly dated now, I think it was January 2016 when it first came out, there was a fantastic report written by the, or constructed by the charity Young Minds, called Resilience for the Digital World. And it had some very insightful factual information in there about what was going on online. And this is, bear in mind, this is 4 years ago now. One third of all the internet users in the world are below the age of 18 now. And at least half of them find online interactions more straightforward than talking face-to-face to their peers. So with all that said, if that's the volume that we're talking about, then it's shocking to know that one in five had shared information, including photos, with people that they only ever knew online. So the difficulty there with digital resilience is that they maybe don't suspect or have any inclination to suspect that the person they're sharing is the person whose profile picture they're looking at. We all know how easy it's to change a Facebook photo or a Twitter profile photo to something that clearly isn't you. You can even change your username on, sorry, your name on Twitter, but not your username. But, you know, it's very easy to assume the identity of somebody else or entirely, all with the aim to exploit vulnerabilities in young people.
Brilliant. Okay. Yeah, that's really helpful. Okay, so we're asking all guests at the moment, what are they most hoping for in a post-COVID world? So what would your answer to that be?
I've listened to some of your podcasts and I know that you probably offered one. I'm going to be a bit cheeky and see if I can just grab three very quick ones. Firstly, I hope we can keep the benefits from what we've learned during lockdown. This extra use of technology, video conferencing, staying connected together, and family time together online, and use that for its benefit. Secondly, for working parents, I know that some have found it incredibly difficult, but others have also found a new lease of life working from home. So I hope some businesses can embrace that, maybe encourage that flexibility for working from home more. And the third one would be to better engage ourselves with our children. I talked about digital resilience. This is a really big thing in the future now with technology. Build that digital resilience within us and within our children, because that's the bedrock of going forward with all this technology.
Brilliant. Okay, well, thank you for joining us today. You can go back to look after the kids now.
Thank you very much.
So thanks for joining us today, and thanks for all your tips and support. We'll try and get some of those ideas into the blurb around the podcast, the software monitoring and things like that people can find. In our next episode, we will be speaking to our very own Dr. Kat. And Kat is going to be talking to us about how to be the best you can be during lockdown by using the critical resource of sleep. So join me next time. And above all else, stay well, stay connected, and stay resourced. Thank you.